Welcome to Ekhotra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhotra AI.
So today, we're diving deep, really deep, into a book that, well, it fundamentally shifted American literature, Mark Twain's Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. It's one of those novels that just grabs you and makes you ask some pretty tough questions, you know, about freedom, what's right and wrong, and what civilization even means.
It really is the essential American novel, isn't it? And it's just packed with irony, incredible humor, but also some really biting social critique.
And the author himself, Mark Twain Samuel Langhorne Clemens, actually had such a unique viewpoint.
Absolutely. Born 1835, Missouri, a border state, remember, so slavery was just woven into the fabric of life there. And his time as a steamboat pilot on the Mississippi, that gave him this this unfiltered look at America, all of it, the good, the bad, the ugly.
That background feels so crucial. I mean, the book comes out in 1885. That's a full 20 years after the Civil War ended.
Right.
Slavery is legally gone, but the attitudes, the racism, the sheer hypocrisy, still very much alive.
Deeply ingrained.
So our mission here really is to follow Huck's journey, this incredible moral awakening he goes through as he grapples with what society tells him is right versus, well, what his own gut, his conscience tells him.
And what's so interesting and maybe a bit surprising now is the initial fuss about the book.
Oh, yeah.
When it first came out, libraries weren't banning it because of the racial stuff, not primarily anyway. They banned it because Huck himself, his language, his actions were seen as too crude, too irreverent.
Wow.
The Concord Public Library, famously, just called it trash. They just weren't ready for a voice that sounded so, well, so authentically American, I suppose.
But isn't that trashy voice exactly why we now call Twain the father of American literature?
Uh-huh.
He kind of broke the mold, didn't he? Oh. Moved away from those European styles.
He absolutely did. He captured how Americans actually sounded, their dialects, their humor. And he used that authenticity, that humor and satire, as a weapon for sharp social commentary.
So it's like a picaresque novel, one of those stories about a rogue hero on a journey.
It draws on that tradition, yeah, the picaresque. But Twain twists it. He makes it uniquely American. Instead of just a clever rogue looking out for number one, Huck is this innocent kid almost. And through his eyes, we see all the corruption and the moral blindness of the adults around him.
Okay, I see. So it's not just about Huck growing up. It's about him growing up by rejecting what he's taught.
Precisely. It flips the script on the traditional Bildungsroman, the coming-of-age story. Huck's moral education happens despite or even because he questions the lessons of so-called civilized society.
Which brings us right to that central question, doesn't it? When society's rules, the laws, the religion, the social norms are fundamentally wrong, what should you do?
Exactly. Do you follow the crowd, follow authority, even if it feels morally corrupt? Or do you trust your own direct experience, your own conscience, even if society calls you an outcast or worse? That's the battle raging inside Huck from pretty early on.
And that battle really kicks off with him feeling trapped by civilization, as he calls it. He's living with Widow Douglas and Miss Watson.
Trying to drum religion and manners into him.
Yeah, and he just finds it completely suffocating. It all feels so fake to him, like a performance with no real substance.
And then you get the opposite extreme, Pap Finn, Huck's father.
Oh, Pap. He's genuinely frightening.
Isn't he? He's violent, alcoholic, deeply, virulently racist. Pack embodies the absolute worst kind of freedom, that unchecked, abusive power of a white man in that society who thinks he's superior just because of his skin color. He's almost a product of the moral rot that slavery created.
So Pap's return really pushes Huck. Pap locks him up, wants his money.
Wants control.
Right. But this is where Huck shows how smart he really is, smarter than the civilized folks trying to tame him. He plans this incredible escape.
Brilliant, isn't it? He fakes his own murder.
With pig's blood and everything. Smashes the door. It's so detailed, so thorough to make sure nobody comes looking for him.
Yeah.
It's an amazing act of self-preservation, of ingenuity. And that leads him to Jackson's Island, which is where he finds Jim.
Jim, yeah. Miss Watson's enslaved man who's run away.
Because he overheard Miss Watson planning to sell him down the river, which meant being separated from his wife and children forever. A death sentence, essentially, for his family life.
So they team up. Two runaways, both desperate for freedom, just in different ways.
Exactly. An alliance born out of necessity, out of that shared human need for safety and liberty.
And this is where the Mississippi River becomes so central, isn't it? The river and the raft?
Oh, absolutely. The river is, you know, it's the path to freedom, but it's also a metaphor for it. And the raft is their little island.
The sanctuary.
Yes, a floating sanctuary. On the raft, it's just them, There's mutual respect, interdependence, that whole racial hierarchy that dominates the shore. It dissolves on the raft. It's just two people trying to survive together.
Contrasted with the shore.
The shore is where all the problems are. The violence, the greed, the hypocrisy, the danger. They only go ashore when they absolutely have to, and usually trouble finds them there.
That relationship between Huck and Jim, it gets tested pretty early on, doesn't it? With that prank after the fog.
Yes, the fog incident. That's pivotal. They get separated in this thick fog, terrifying experience for both of them. When Huck finds Jim again, he pretends it was all just a dream Jim had.
Which is cruel, really.
It is. And Jim's reaction is what hits Huck so hard. Jim isn't just mad. He's deeply hurt. His dignity is wounded. He explains how scared he was, how worried he was for Huck. And to realize Huck treated that genuine fear, that human connection, as a joke.
It makes Huck see him differently.
It forces Huck to confront the reality that seeing Jim as property allows him to dismiss Jim's feelings, his humanity. And that leads to, well, probably one of the most important moments in the book.
The apology.
The apology. Huck wrestles with himself because everything he's been taught tells him it's demeaning to apologize to a black man. But he does it. And he thinks, let me get this right. It was 15 minutes before I could work myself up to go and humble myself to a nigger, but I'd done it, and I weren't ever sorry for it afterwards, neither.
15 minutes of fighting his conditioning.
15 minutes to choose empathy over prejudice. It's his first major step towards seeing Jim as fully human, as his friend, a huge moral leap.
But like you said, the shore keeps intruding. Like with the Grangerfords and the Shepherdsons.
Right, the feud. Huck lands there and is initially quite taken with the Grangerfords. You know, the nice house, the manners, the appearance of gentility, southern aristocracy.
But underneath?
Underneath, it's rotten. They're locked in this bloody, pointless, generations-old feud. It's Twain masterfully showing how that veneer of civilization, of honor, can hide just brutal violence and complete moral emptiness. The so-called good families are drenched in blood over nothing.
Things get even more complicated for Huck and Jim when those two con artists show up, the Duke and the King.
Oh, the Duke and the Dauphin, yes. They basically hijack the raft. Suddenly, Huck and Jim aren't just dodging slave catchers, they're stuck with these manipulative frauds.
And these guys use the raft to run their scams on unsuspecting townsfolk along the river.
They do, and their scams, like that ridiculous Royal Nonsuch show, they expose just how gullible people can be, how easily led by claims of authority or promises of spectacle. But they also put Jim in constant danger, forcing him and Huck to be even more secretive.
Yet, even amidst all that chaos with the Duke and King, Twain gives us these incredibly humanizing moments with Jim.
He does. Like when Jim tells Huck about his daughter, Elizabeth, how he didn't realize she was deaf after having scarlet fever, and he hit her for not listening.
That story is heartbreaking.
It is. It reveals the depth of Jim's love as a father, his grief, his regret. It shatters any stereotype and forces Huck and us, the readers, to see Jim's profound humanity, the terrible cruelty of slavery tearing families apart.
All this leads towards the climax, doesn't it? When the King and Duke commit the ultimate betrayal.
The lowest blow. They sell Jim for 40 dirty dollars.
And Huck is devastated. But his first reaction is interesting. He falls back on his old programming.
Instantly. He thinks, I've done wrong. I helped the slave escape. I'm wicked. I'm going to hell. All that religious guilt hammered into him by Miss Watson comes rushing back.
So he actually writes the letter to tell Miss Watson where Jim is.
He does. He writes the letter. He genuinely believes sending Jim back to slavery is the right thing to do, the only way to save his own soul from damnation, according to the rules he's been taught. He's got it right there in his hand.
But then
he thinks about Jim. He remembers their time on the raft, Jim's kindness, Jim calling him honey, protecting him, being the only real friend he's ever had. He weighs that lived experience, that human connection,
against the Salvation Society promised him.
Exactly. And he realizes that friendship, that loyalty to Jim, matters more than his own soul, at least as defined by that corrupt society. So he tears up the letter.
All right, then. I'll go to hell.
That line still gives me chills. It's the absolute peak of his moral journey. He chooses humanity over doctrine, friendship over institutionalized evil. He claims his moral freedom.
It's such a powerful moment. But the book doesn't quite end there. There's that whole last section at the Phelps farm.
Yes, the Phelps farm section. It's controversial for some readers. Huck gets mistaken for Tom Sawyer.
And then the real Tom Sawyer shows up and joins in this elaborate, unnecessary scheme to free Jim.
Right. And this is where Twain draws that sharp contrast. Tom turns Jim's desperate situation into a game, an adventure based on the romantic novels he reads. It's all about style and elaborate plots, completely disregarding Jim's safety and dignity.
It's almost painful to read after Huck's big moral decision. Tom treats Jim like a prop.
He does. Tom represents imagination gone wrong fantasy, completely detached from human reality and moral responsibility. He's had all the advantages of civilization, yet he is morally clueless compared to the ignorant Huck. Huck learned through experience, Tom learned through books, and it stunted his empathy.
It highlights Huck's growth by showing what he's grown beyond.
Precisely. And then comes the anticlimax, the reveal. Tom finally admits, after all that dangerous nonsense, that Jim has actually been legally free for 2 months.
Miss Watson died and freed him in her will.
Yes. And adding to that, Jim reveals that the dead man they saw way back on the wrecked steamboat, that was Pap.
So Huck is free too, in a way. Free from Pap's tyranny.
Both find a form of freedom, though Huck's is perhaps more complicated. So when you pull it all together, what's the lasting takeaway?
For me, it's about what true freedom means. It's not just about escaping physical bonds. It's about achieving moral autonomy.
I agree. It's the freedom to think for yourself, to act on your conscience, even when society condemns you. Jim holds on to his inner freedom, his dignity, throughout. Huck has to fight tooth and nail, reject his upbringing, to find his.
It's a moral education where you learn by unlearning society's lessons.
Which is why Hemingway wasn't exaggerating, really, when he said, "All modern American literature comes from one book by Mark Twain called Huckleberry Finn. It set a new course."
It really holds up that mirror, doesn't it? Showing the constant struggle between doing what's easy or accepted and doing what's truly right based on empathy.
A struggle that requires real courage and choosing connection over conformity.
And Huck's final words just cement his decision, his rejection of being civilized again.
He knows where he stands now.
He says, "But I reckon I got to light out for the territory ahead of the rest. Because Aunt Sally, she's going to adopt me and civilize me, and I can't stand it. I've been there before."
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.